Coming up on this week's Redcast.
What we're looking for is to say, what's special about crypto assets? What's different about DLT?
You know, ESMA in particular has nearly 50 some odd regulatory technical standards that they've got to implement within the next 12 to 18 months. I mean, that seems crazy to me. Good luck on them. All eyes are on 2024 at this point before we can see any significant push from a legislative front from Congress.
What I don't see is a lot of leadership to drive us from point A to point B. Who owns the regulators? Rhiannon, a perfect example, can set the requirement stage, but who is helping to go build a set of industry standard mechanisms so that this works in a way that makes sense to all, is cost effective, and is customer safe?
Yeah, I think you hit the key point there, which is standards, but it's not a PDF. You know, it's code, right? We need to move to thinking about standards in this space and others as a common domain model, you know, a way to think about the DLT manipulation of these transactions in real time.
Welcome to Redcast.
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 Redcast. Tomorrow's RegTech Radar today. Hello, I'm PJ, CEO and founder of JWG. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 3 of RegCast. Today, we're surfing the waves of digital asset regulatory implementation. In advance of our 22nd March trading seminar, we have some of the key experts here on this panel to talk about what's going on. But first, I'd like to set the scene. We've been tracking digital assets policy for years. This is not a new thing. In fact, the Europe is already deep into implementation. What has derailed things a bit is the FTX nautical disaster for the policy waves across the world. Just when it felt like policymakers had pens on quills and the game was changing, you know, the tide went out and there are a lot of people swimming naked in Warren Buffett language. So a lot of the political oars have pulled back, but some of the brave policymakers have pushed forwards. And what we're seeing is different lines in the sand, or what we think might be different lines. It's really a patchwork, and we're seeing that patchwork globally with things like the BCBS balance sheet guidance, the FATF money laundering guidance, the OECD tax guidance, and the even FSB has gotten in on the act with risk guidance. But these are just high-level principles. They don't really give us a detailed rule framework for trading these assets. Each jurisdiction is coming up with its own framework and working out how to adopt things like disclosures, what a trading venue really does, to what extent they need to look at things like money laundering and sanctions, client assets, clearing, settlement, taxes, all that hard stuff of TradFi. And our latest research cataloged 36 different initiatives out there, which will be linked to the show notes. But what's becoming clear when looking at them in aggregate is that the UK has really blazed a path with their latest consultation paper. And that, you know, really to us, it feels like TradFi equals DeFi is the message that screams from that. And that these international principles are now getting real in terms of how they are being thought about in terms of rule books. And that's interesting because globally, there's been a push for self-regulatory organizations and how we think about then getting to common guidance in these headwinds of where Europe and UK are on this side of the pond. So this has enormous implications for the industry. And who better to join us on this panel than a expert in EU political policy who's completing her trifecta of regulators in UK bodies, a reformed trade association junkie who leads policy for one of the top blockchain-based compliance-aware tokenization companies, and a consulting heavyweight who now sits on the board of advisors for the Global Digital Assets and Cryptocurrency Association. So thank you for joining us. Rhiannon, can you just please introduce what you do?
Hi, I'm Rhiannon Price. So I'm the manager of the wholesale crypto asset policy team within the Financial Conduct Authority. So I work closely with colleagues in payments and digital assets, as well as the capital markets policy area, on considering how best to input to Treasury's recent consultation document on the crypto asset regime going forwards.
And Rhiannon, I think we might have met even in MiFID I days. Do you want to just roll back to like what you did for Europe?
That's right. I spent 10 years working for Kay Swinburn within the European Parliament. And in that time, I worked on pretty much every piece of post-financial crisis legislation that came through that related to markets. So MiFID, market abuse, CSDR, EMIR, recovery and resolution of CCPs, short selling, the prospectus regulation, you name a four-letter acronym and I was somehow involved in it.
Well, thank you. And thank you for bringing this wealth of knowledge to this particular conversation. Jackson, why don't you introduce what you do?
Yeah, thanks, PJ, and thanks to JWG for the opportunity to speak. Just to give you a little bit of a brief background, I'm based just outside of Washington, D.C., and I've been here for at least a dozen years, actually more than a dozen years now. Really got my feet wet at FinTech and at the Milken Institute Center for Financial Markets. We jump-started our FinTech program back in 2014 before FinTech was a buzzword here. And then since 2020, I've jumped on with Securency as the director of policy and government relations here. Securency itself is a blockchain-based capital markets infrastructure technology company, which was established back in 2015. And what we do is we deliver white labeled, interoperable and asset agnostic technology to large financial institutions, asset managers, that's underpinned by a multi-jurisdictional compliance framework that supports the creation, issuance, distribution, and management and trading of tokenized digital assets. So obviously a lot there, a lot going on, interesting times currently and ahead.
Yes. And thank you for joining, and thank you for helping to push this this conference forward. Adam.
Well, then thank you, PJ. Appreciate the opportunity here. So Adam Schneider, I'm an old tech nerd who found my way to the financial services industry. And 40 odd years later, have consulted to most of the big buildings that are prominent in the industry. And a number of the startups, fintechs, and crypto native firms who have been trying to attack the big building. So it's kind of a fun ride. These days, I am on the advisory board of the Global Digital Currency Association, and also a bit of a student of the emerging industry as it tries to figure out what it wants to be when it grows up. A background in regulatory, really implementation, not a regulator, but implementation and kind of surviving through that process, the new sets of markets and capabilities, and projection of future trends, and, frankly, what will happen in terms of regulatory and compliance requirements.
Fantastic. Thank you. So with this panel, I think the first obvious question isn't, why do we need rules? That I think FTX is taking care of that for us. It's what is the industry doing to get to rules? And Rhiannon, there's two amazing CPs consultation papers that have hit here in the UK. Do you want to give us your quick summary with all those wonderful acronyms about what's happening with the asset management one as well as the crypto asset CP?
Absolutely. So there's certainly been an awful lot of media, I think, already on the consultation that the UK Treasury put out at the start of February, and it closes on the 30th of April. And it puts out a very broad regime around how they want to regulate crypto assets going forward. So it focuses in on activities in relation to crypto assets, and then requires in the future the FCA to write further detail on how those activities should be conducted and what regulatory requirements would be around them. And so it's very broad in scope and covers activities like operating a trading venue and providing custody services, intermediation services, as well as setting out a market abuse framework and a framework for issuance and disclosure of crypto assets, similar to the prospectus regime. So it's a very, very broad framework that basically would aim to give the FCA powers to then write additional rules over precisely how that would operate. So that one is, as I say, very, very broad with an awful lot of scope going forward in terms of what it's going to look like. But beyond that, in the kind of the tokenization of asset space, where we're not talking about unbacked crypto assets, instead we're talking about real assets that are being tokenized, the FCA has published a discussion paper that very much focuses on updating and improving the UK asset management regime more broadly. So one of the issues that that looks at is the issue of tokenization. And we're very much looking to understand what it is from industry, what interest there is in the short and medium term, in terms of how asset managers want to use this technology to tokenize assets, and what sort of difficulties they might find in the regulatory space. So it is a very, very open consultation, and that one closes on the 22nd of May. So again, we're really looking to understand what it is industry wants to do in this area so we can facilitate it, better understand any risks involved, and work with industry very much in order to come to some good solutions.
And I love the solutions focus of the asset management one. Tell us a bit more about the overall thinking and the principles behind what the FCA would be asked to do with regards to all these different rule frameworks that are within the crypto asset discussion. And you're given your history and helping to define a lot of those things. What is your thinking about what it's going to take to get them right for digital assets?
So I think the overarching goal from regulators, from the UK government, is to kind of focus on the same risk, the same regulatory outcome. And I focus in on outcome because I think that really is what we're going for, is the idea that in traditional finance, we already have a really good framework for regulating activities in the financial services space. And here what we're looking for is to say, what's special about crypto assets? What's different about DLT in contrast to what we already have? And what's quite nice about the way the framework that Treasury is putting forward is that it puts a lot of the detail of those decisions down to the FCA and allows us to say, well, what is it? What's the outcome we're trying to achieve in our custody framework at the moment, our CAS rules? And then rather than saying, right, we need to have exactly the same rule for the crypto space, instead we're saying, well, we want to protect client assets. That's our end goal. So the FCA will theoretically have the ability to adapt all of those existing CAS framework, but then adapt it into the specific place that works with the technology. So remains technology neutral, but recognizes what's special about it, additional risks, or things that perhaps aren't risks at all anymore, because the technology has reduced the risk that we would have been trying to use regulation to mitigate in the traditional space.
Yeah, and then the other wrinkle on that then is adopt some of the innovation that is also possible to help with these rules, like with the how you exchange reports with clients, for example, right?
Absolutely. So there's an awful lot there where we'll be looking at what solutions are out there in the marketplace that can make that easier, that we can in some way facilitate in order that things like reporting are done in a more efficient basis than we've had in traditional finance, because we're not left with some of those legacy systems.
Excellent. Jettison some of those legacy boats. Jackson, what's your perspective sitting in DC? I mean, there's that US presidential order that kicked off close to a year ago, I guess. What's the state of play and internationally then, how are you looking at the playing field?
Yeah, I guess not only for just from a U.S. perspective, but also international. The question that comes up is, you know, where do we start, and what do we focus on first, or who ultimately regulates, right? I think those are three questions that are currently being grappled with right now in the U.S. and certainly elsewhere internationally. We've seen significant developments, at least from the U.S. perspective over the past, I'd say, year and a half. I mean, you could think it back to the President's Working Group on Stablecoins coming out with their report back in November of 2021. And then you can think of the executive order that came out in March of last year. So we're a year now on from the executive order that tasked a number of different departments and agencies with coming up with, you know, recommendations, but also, you know, how are you going to deal with this? How are your agencies dealing with this now? When you look at the executive order and you look at the follow-on publications that came off that came after the executive order with Treasury, Commerce, Department of Justice responding, I think it's what I read from them is kind of acknowledges to and I'm a millennial, that meme that you constantly text your friends that shows Braveheart with Mel Gibson screaming hold, right? Or hold the line, right? And frankly, to be honest with you, I don't think the executive order really does too much in terms of, completely shifting the conversation or changing the way in which various departments and agencies are currently seeking to address or response raise, right? I think it was frankly just it was a green light for agencies or a continued green light for agencies and departments to continue doing what they're doing. Frankly, I'm not sure, we've heard a lot about this whole of government approach to digital assets. I'm not sure whether that's the case, considering when you read various documents that came out as a result of the executive order, everyone's got a different definition of crypto assets or digital assets. And so we can't even start, talking about how we move forward without, understanding, do we have some understanding of the definitions here or some, agreement among all of us as to what this is, right? I think there were some other notable aspects and topics of the executive order. Obviously, AML CFT is top of mind for these agencies. Retail CBDCs were very much in focus. And you can look at, specifically Treasury and the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy coming out with various reports focused on that in particular. And I think they're much forward looking on retail CBDCs. The Fed seems to have taken a reluctant stance recently. They've obviously shuttered Project Hamilton, which was interesting considering all the follow on work that I thought was going to be undertaken by that project. And then if you look at some of the responses, they seemingly had a negative view on public permissionless networks and seemed to favor much more private permission networks, which I think is a key thing, and especially some of these networks that we're seeing being developed by various financial institutions that are coming to the fore. I think there's a couple other aspects to all this. When you look at what's happened pretty much since that executive order from March, the central role of Treasury in all of this, right? Even if you read the Commerce response, the executive order, it was basically repeating exactly what Treasury said. Treasury is obviously very involved with the PWG working group. The undersecretary Nellie Lang is out there on a monthly basis talking about the risks and potential opportunities posed by stablecoins or in this case recent marks tokenized deposits. The other thing about this is the central role that FSOC is going to play in all this. And I think if you recall from the PWG report, if Congress can't come forward with, some legislative activity around this stuff, then, PWG basically said, well, FSOC will take over from here. Right. And I think that's worth, keeping in the back of your mind as we move forward on this policy is that, if Congress can't get its act together, the FSOC, which is under, which is Treasury led, is certainly interested in taking that step forward. Right. And last thing I'll say about the executive order is that to me, it's a reflection of what we've seen in the past with these kind of large executive orders looking to either figure out a way to develop a regulatory regime or standards around something, or looking to clarify or create a more conducive regime for financial services. And I think back to the Trump administration with its executive order on the core principles for regulating the United States financial system. And yes, there was like 5 reports that came out of that. Unfortunately, I had to read through all of them. But then it came to, okay, well, what's next, and what was implemented from that, and very little, right? There was a lot of recommendations for Congress, a lot of recommendations for agencies and departments, and frankly, it was great writing that amounted to very little. And I'm wondering if we're going to see that with this executive order, right? If the same thing comes to fruition. So I'll stop there. Basically, in my view, all eyes are on 2024 at this point before we can see any significant push from a legislative front from Congress.
Yeah. Bring on the 119th. Adam, what's your perspective with all the big grown-ups you've been speaking to?
So I think the big grown-ups fundamentally reject, by the way, regulatory and big institutions reject the idea that little firms should be taking their energy away from them. And I think, as you kind of started with PJ, we have to kind of acknowledge that what the smaller firms have done on the crypto native side hasn't been working. There's just too much examples of just bad actors or regulatory not following the rules or versions of customer fraud or trading against customers or all kinds of things that are not acceptable in traditional markets and are real problems here. I think that the crypto native firms have to recognize that it is a lot easier for the big institutions to take on the regulatory and compliance responsibilities for this asset class than it is for them to build the regulatory and compliance and technology and capital requirements for this asset class. It is just a lot easier for the big guys to get in than it is for the little guys to catch up. So from a go forward point of view, acknowledge that the large firms will get in, and yes, they need regulatory certainty, and yes, we have to deal with the capital issues, and no, tokenized deposits are probably not more risky than regular deposits, et cetera. The large firms will get in, they will take on the technological advantages, and they'll begin to offering competitive products and capabilities. And as Jackson indicated, really open up their balance sheets in terms of tokenizing traditional assets in ways that can trade, settle, and value in new and interesting ways. So there's an awful lot has to happen to get from point A to point B. We have to acknowledge that, you know, 15,000 coins issued by tiny little firms that are sponsored by organizations with minimal balance sheet assets other than their own coins probably is not the wave of the future. We have to acknowledge that the crypto native firms have to step up their own organizational and regulatory capabilities, which is why Global Digital Currency Association is trying to come up with a set of industry standards for, accounting and auditing and regulatory and compliance, and kind of words that are pretty normal in the traditional space. And I think looking past that, preparing for the next generation of tokenization, of real-time settlement, of immediate kind of viability, and organize an industry structure that is conducive. We do not have such a thing today, and I'm more familiar with the US than the UK market, but right now, almost all significant financials are experimenting with their own version of how do we tokenize and how do we talk to customers and how do we settle and how do we trade. And if you look at some of the other markets, the securitization market in the US, for example, well, you know what the assets are, and you know what the trustee does, and you know what the sponsor does, and you know what the legal ramifications are if there are asset quality issues, and you know how reporting works. And none of that is as fast and as speedy as it should be in a modern digital set of capabilities. But the roles, responsibility, legal requirements, and investor protection are really all well defined. And we're not there yet in either the crypto assets because of some of the regulatory compliance concerns. And we're certainly not there yet in the experimentation stage or major financials. So look forward, you have to get there, and it has to be essentially as safe to hold these assets, regardless of whether they're a Bitcoin or a coin or a slice of a credit card portfolio, as they are in any other mechanism. Customers are protected, know your customer rules are enforced, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what I don't see is a lot of leadership to drive us from point A to point B. Who owns the process? The regulators, Rhiannon, a perfect example, can set the requirement stage, but who is helping to go build a set of industry standard mechanisms so that this works in a way that makes sense to all, is cost effective, and is customer safe?
That's such a great point. I get Rhiannon, that's central to the consultations I've read, is this whole idea of engagement and listening to the industry and, you know, building coalitions. But this is a massive coalition building exercise. How do you think about that?
Absolutely. I think in the traditional finance space, the FCA has, we have our usual ways of consulting people. We have the Trade Association Consultative Committee, where we bring together trade associations from across the regulated space, all of the people you're used to hearing from, AFME, ISDA, ISLA, et cetera, all of the acronyms. In the crypto space, it's just less clear who to speak to. It's a brand new industry, so it's less clear how people are organizing and whether or not there is a kind of one collective group one can talk to. And I think it's one of the things that Jackson said in terms of we can just write the rules and then industry has to come with us later and implement them. I think that's really not what we want to do. We want to write these rules with industry so that they are implementable and will achieve the outcomes. And I think the only way we'll get to do that is by working with industry groups who actually understand the detail of the technology so that we can write better rules that work with that technology and genuinely achieve the outcome that we all want to achieve. But I think there's a long way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think Jackson highlighted the complexity of just getting the governance right in the US. And they had to basically, in that order, lay out how big the table was to make any decision.
It's a lot simpler in the UK, I would say. So one of the elements since we left the EU is the UK has laid out what it calls the future regulatory framework. So there you have a relatively simple concept that Treasury broadly legislates to give powers to the FCA or the Bank of England to then write more detailed rules in specific areas. So in terms of the way the crypto asset framework will work, there's already a bill going through Parliament that basically says the Treasury will have power to give powers to us to regulate a very broad definition of crypto assets that would cover tokenization, anything like that. Then the next step would be secondary legislation that Treasury would write that would specifically give those powers to the FCA. And then the FCA would write the rules. It's relatively simple in contrast to, I think, the many different regulators in the US.
Yeah, and people made a lot of that. So MiCA is going in now. We're just getting started now. But it's going to take a while to implement throughout Europe. With the process you just described, where would we be in a couple of years' time in the UK vis-a-vis digital asset rules?
So I think it's going to depend very much on how we develop them over time. I mean, we could commit to a really fast timeframe that would be 20 consultations this year that industry would really struggle to deal with, as I say. And so I think it's much more important that we focus in on getting the rules right rather than setting an arbitrary timeline. So I think what's quite beneficial about the process that I was outlining is that there's lots of opportunity for that engagement and for things to change course based on that engagement. So I don't think it's quite so necessary to say, right, it's all going to be in place by a deadline, which having spent 10 years in the EU framework, those deadlines always dropped about a year. I think MiFID 1 was 2 years late. Yeah. MiFID 2 was, again, a year late. The deadlines are sometimes unhelpful when you're trying to say what is actually the best outcome for this rule. And sometimes it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah, and PJ, just to add on to that. I mean, just to add on real quick, I mean, you know, if you look at MiCA, it's got, you know, ESMA in particular has nearly 50 some odd regulatory technical standards that they've got to implement within the next 12 to 18 months. I mean, that seems crazy to me. You know, good luck on them. But you know, it would be interesting to see when all the dust is settled, whether the timelines that the EU agreed to are able to be met.
Adam?
Well, and I did want to add, I don't think we're done with technological improvements. I don't think we're done with new products that could be created by code. I don't think we're done with the responsibility set between the authors of the code and the liability structure around them and the governance mechanisms that have been done. These are all moving at, you know, to quote an old phrase, warp speed. And I'd urge the regulatory community to be really thinking about the conditions of success rather than the individual technological capabilities. Because I do think that all these things are continuing to evolve in really interesting ways. I mean, atomic settlement is wonderful from a balance sheet and risk point of view, near as I can go tell. The notion of two parties agreeing on a blockchain type mechanism that something has happened instead of multiple systems reconciling was fiction 20 years ago. And is now like, well, that'd be really interesting in terms of minimizing risk and ensuring that both parties understand terms of deals. So any of these rule set activities really has to look forward to what could well happen and establish, minimum standards, maybe not so minimum standards, what is good for the customer? What is acceptable in terms of risk? What is acceptable in terms of the mechanism for storage? What are the liability structures, the capital structures underlying this? And the technology has to be agnostic, but we have to plan as though it's going to keep accelerating. We're not done.
Yeah, and I think you hit the key point there, which is standards, but it's not a PDF. You know, it's code, right? We need to move to thinking about standards in this space and others as a common domain model, you know, a way to think about the DLT manipulation of these transactions in real time. And I think that's a real interesting opportunity because we got so many people around the table. Some of those TradFi associations have actually backed this whole, that very concept, even for their own businesses as there are now. But that's another unknown here is how quickly we can get that common domain model online, right?
Solutions that we offer to our institutional partners and how they can help alleviate or address some of the regulatory concerns that I've read in so many consultations the past week, let's just say. And I think that engagement is incredibly important. And I know it certainly takes time, but to make regulators and policymakers aware of what's actually out there and what's actually happening, there's nothing more important than that. And I'll say just from from our perspective, control of tokenized assets, which are a huge issue and a problem being raised or risk being raised in various reports that you read, we've talked extensively about custody, control location, and transaction reversibility of various assets. That a lot of the issues that are being raised by regulators and policymakers, not just in the U.S., but around the world and in multilateral organizations as well. So that engagement is huge. And I think you're starting to see, a lot of the discussions are percolating up to the multilateral level, right? Or at least the regional level. You could argue that, MiCA and what Europe is doing is certainly interesting and developing standards from the regional perspective, but then also, you're seeing some of the formation, early formations, maybe not of standards. PJ, you were talking about principles before, but I mean, if you look at what the FSB came out with on its, consultation on regulation and supervision and oversight of digital assets, BIS, Augustus Karstens really recently talking about, what I view as, what he was saying is one ledger to rule them all. If you look at FATF and what they're doing on virtual assets and VASP requirements, including the travel rule.
Let's try to circle this back. I think we're at the moment we're in danger of losing the audience that we're trying to create for the 22nd of March. So let me move to the final closing wrap up. Jackson, we'll come back to you last. Rhiannon, I'd like to kick off with you. What's the most important challenge that people can come to take away from the 22nd of March that you'll be addressing? And what do you hope that that you'll get out of the conference?
I can sum it up in one word, regulation. It's really coming. And so I think learning more about the way we're approaching it and how best to engage with the FCA and other regulators as we're embarking on this challenge together.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Adam.
I think we have to be forward-looking about the financial system moving to a tokenized set of mechanisms and capabilities, distinguish the technology from the regulatory goals, and figure out how to get all parties to coexist in a reasonable fashion, including new innovative entrants who are, in fact, trying to help, subject to the proper set of controls and capabilities.
Fantastic. Jackson?
Yeah, tokenization is not the be-all, end-all here. Just because you can tokenize, an asset, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden all of capital markets, current ills are addressed, right? And I think the challenges that are going to be faced, concerning interoperability, scalability of some of these platforms, how do you automate compliance, and how do you interact with and become interchangeable with various forms of value? All these challenges are being raised, and certainly tokenization is one aspect of improving, our current capital markets, but there are a heck of a lot more, opportunities out there in addition to leveraging the benefits of tokenization.
Fantastic. I'll only add in wrap up that, you know, these standards don't write themselves and the code doesn't maintain itself. So there needs to be that infrastructure established to pull people together. And for that, you need a business case. And then I've seen too many discussions about standards in my time just to realize that they don't go anywhere unless you get some buy-in and commitment from that really means something from the businesses involved. So thank you very much, lady and gentlemen, for giving everyone a sneak preview of what we'll be covering on the 22nd of March. I will thank you for listening to this podcast. Wherever you downloaded it, please like it and helps people find us. We've had nearly 20,000 downloads so far. We're keen to keep that going. We will be on air again very soon with another RegCast in advance of 22nd of March, but looking forward to seeing you there. Thanks again.
You can download the podcast via Spotify, Apple, and Google, but also I'd encourage people to come to the JWG website, which, as hopefully you will know, is jwg-it.eu. Go to the Intelligence Hub and create your bespoke library.
This is RegCast.
Tomorrow's RegTech Radar today.